Barry, before we talk about your music, I was wondering if you might play just a little bit, maybe kind of what you created for the opening of this silent film.
Can do. Here it is, the opening credits for The Crowd.
Thank you very much. Had you seen The Crowd before I loaned you a copy of this film? When I asked you, would you be willing to take this gig, and I gave you a copy of the movie, had you seen it before?
I had never seen the movie before, and in fact, I'd never heard of it. Of course, I've heard of King Vidor. I guess I mainly know him through The Fountainhead, which is one of those young idealists' movies. And so I really didn't quite know what to expect from a silent movie from him, but of course, I was really, really pleased. It's got that human touch. It is free of a lot of what we don't like about the silent movie era. All of that melodrama and all the, you know, you get those men with the big painted eyes and great big eyeballs looking this way and that. And there's just none of that. It's really a modern movie.
Yeah, I think silent dramas are very difficult to get used to for modern audiences because of what you just said. The overacting that comes in with a lot of it is what you typically know of silent movies. And of course that works in comedy and we can still laugh and appreciate it today with a lot of silent comedies, but it just doesn't translate as well in drama to today's eyes and in today's sensitivities.
You know, I was, in fact, several years ago now, I was watching Ben-Hur, the old version. There are two versions, in case you didn't know, one in, done in the 50s with Charlton Heston, but there was one in the 20s that was a silent movie, and in many ways a lot better than the 50s one, but there's just stuff that doesn't translate. And so there would be this beautiful, tender moment, and the audience would kind of be laughing because it's so syrupy, and it was painful because you want to jump into it and not you laugh at it, but at the same time there's just a little unbridgeable gap. And I guess by 1928 there were people like King Vidor working that brought a more naturalistic element to it.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, Vidor was being influenced by a lot of German films at the time and expressionist cinema. And so you get these incredible, magnificent visuals that are common to not only this film, but also the last film that you had scored for us as well, Sunrise, which was a Hollywood production.
Correct.
That was done by a German director. And so they were all influencing one another.
Right. F.W. Murnau's Sunrise.
That's right. That's right. Well, one of the things about scoring silent films and music, of course, is that you want to write music, I guess, that is meant to highlight some of the action on screen, to create some sort of emotion, but yet not overly draw attention to itself, I guess, because it is meant to go hand in hand with the visuals, even though this is a silent film.
Right.
What are some of the challenges that you faced in creating music for a silent film?
Well, Nathan, as always, the question is what style of music to do. This particular one seemed a little more populist than some of the silent films that I've done before, and so I kind of brought a real sense of melody to it, real stuff that you can really hang your hat on. And the thing is, as you said, the balance of music versus the picture, it's actually a whole lot easier with silent movies because,
really?
Yeah, there's no dialogue or sound effects that you've got to get out of the way of. Mm-hmm. Film composers traditionally sort of have a little bit of fun with chase scenes and fight scenes because if you put too much percussive zap pow into it, than the actual sound effects that are actually going zap-pow from guns and spaceships and whatnot sort of clash with it. So it's really interesting. Next time you watch an action movie, whether it's set in space or on Earth, pay attention when they get to the big fight scene or the big chase scene or whatever it is. You'll find that a lot of the percussion is actually done by the sound effects and people shouting, no, or whatever they're shouting, yes, and not necessarily by the music. So what I've got to do is there are no sound effects and there is no dialogue. So I've got to provide, I'm able to provide something that's a little more musically interesting, something that in a movie or television show today would seem kind of intrusive.
Mm-hmm. So give me an example of something like that. The Crowd is, of course, a film where it is a drama, and there's not a lot of, you know, big action sequences that you're going to be riding to. But there are times when something is happening on screen. I think of, I guess there's one scene that's very dramatic visually where the camera is going up the length of a skyscraper and going way, way, way up
into
a window where we see this terrific scene of these office workers, basically drones at desks doing these horribly mundane jobs. And so,
and you know, during a time, by the way, 1928, when a whole lot of the movie audience hadn't really seen anything like that. Mm. I mean, these people are sitting there in a small town theater looking at this amazing thing.
This is what the big city is like.
Exactly, oh, exactly.
So give me an example of some music from the film where we've got something happening visually on screen that you want to...
Well, there's a great little scene right toward the beginning of the movie where there's a row of boys on a fence and they're talking about what they want to do when they grow up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to be a cowboy, et cetera. And one guy says, I want to be a preacher. The other guy says, I want to be a cowboy. And they ask our man, 12-year-old Johnny Sims, what do you want to do? And he says, I want to make something of myself. And you can see this little ambition firing in his eyes. Great kid acting and directing of a child actor there. And then right at that time, we see the ambulance coming through town and there's been some sort of thing. So you've got to suddenly communicate panic and also maybe a little sense of tragedy. So here we go. This comes from about the third scene in the movie The Crowd.
I'm Nathan Cohn speaking with Barry Brake, who's going to be performing Tuesday night as part of our Cinema Tuesday series. He's going to be accompanying our screening of the silent film classic The Crowd, nominated for 2 Academy Awards back at the very first Oscar ceremony back in 1927, 1928. Barry, you're a big fan of Wagnerian opera, I know. And so did you use any leitmotifs? Are there certain themes in your music for this film that kind of work their way throughout the movie?
Absolutely, Nathan. Wow, you're good. Here's the deal. Just in case you're not up on your homework here, there are two different sort of strains in opera. In one of them, the orchestra serves as a giant guitar, you know, so it's like, la donna mobile, you know, and that's really what the thing happens. The other one, the orchestra, is more like what we think of as a modern movie soundtrack with little themes. And so you have a little theme maybe that represents our hero, or maybe a feeling, or the love theme, and so on and so forth. We're all so familiar with this that it's part of our vocabulary. Obi-Wan Kenobi says to Luke, there is another besides you.
Right.
And just at that time, you hear, and you think, oh my gosh, it's Leia.
Yeah,
even
be
before
her.
He gets to saying it, the audience knows it and feels it. Even if you're not even thoroughly aware of it, it's getting in there because that theme is so tied to Princess Leia. So, just like when you hear that fabulous low brass, bom, 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 that's just, everybody knows that's Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
So that at the very end of the movie, that's actually Episode 1, when young Anakin, just a little kid, has something bad happen to him and he can respond in a good way or a bad way, his little theme is kind of going along, playing, and you hear, and you think, oh my gosh, that's the dawn.
Yeah, it's coming.
And it's coming. So anyway, so that's what a leitmotif is. I use quite a few of them. There are little themes. Actually, some of them you've already heard. Throughout the movie, there is a theme that stretches through of the crowd. Is the crowd with you or against you? The crowd will laugh with you for forever, mm-hmm. but it'll only mourn with you for a day. It's fickle, and yet at the same time, the crowd is what provides us with our humanity. So my main little theme for the crowd, which you've already heard, is... And so whenever that theme emerges, whether it's on a busy, scurrying city street, you just heard it in the main opening credits, but then you also heard it in the ambulance scene, if you were kind of listening for it, where... The tragedy that is a personal tragedy that's happening revolving around the ambulance's arrival is also bustled around by this huge crowd that's appearing in this small town street. Something's going on.
Play that ambulance, just the ambulance bit right there, and you know, let's and play your crowd those notes, and then let's play the ambulance theme.
Okay, so here's the bum, 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 bum. And so it's got a nice little in the opening credits. That kind of sound to it. So here's what happens in the ambulance scene. So you hear that little thing.
I heard you play it as chords almost.
Right. It's kind of fun to work that out. The director is so excellent at revisiting themes. He'll replay an entire scene with completely different emotions. At the beginning of their marriage, there's all this. They're sitting in this sort of ramshackle house, and the door is unhitched, but everybody's happy. And then several months later, as the marriage is kind of beginning to sour, it's exactly the same scene, the same sequence of events with the door unhinged and a couple of other things in this ramshackle house, and they're oppressive and awful. There's one scene where he's kind of sneaking in the train to try to find where his wife is sleeping, and it's the very first night of their marriage. And then there's another scene where almost the same thing happens. It shows the wife with this sense of anticipation and the husband coming in, coming back up, but it's the first time after their fight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun for me to see where those little parallels are that come so naturally to a really great filmmaker and try to underline them with musical scoring.
Now, your music that you've written here, you don't have any notes in front of you. You're
I've
basically
got some notes
working.
Well, you've got
a few notes here.
I got my themes over here.
You got your
here.
Themes over yeah. here. But you're basically working from a long list of cues and timings for the film.
Correct.
How much of this is fully improvised, and how much of it is kind of your themes that you have through composed? How do you work it out?
Well, it would be very, very difficult for me to compose and then perform every single note, note for note, as I'm trying to watch the movie and stick with the action. So I sort of gave up on that as any kind of goal. What I do is I have figured out the shape of where I'm going to go. It's like deciding where your conversation is going to go when you converse with somebody. And then the actual words may vary here and there, although you're always saying exactly what you want to say. So if you're preparing some presentation for the Tuesday morning meeting, well, it might not be word for word the way you prepared it the night before, but point for point, it's pretty much the message. So that's kind of what I do. Of course, in the early days of silent film, a lot of times they would just hire a piano player to just sit down there and play popular tunes of the
day. Knock out Maple Leaf Rag.
Yeah, you know. And that seems to kind of almost have nothing to do with the music. Oh, well, you know, when the villain comes, you start playing something in a minor key and that's about it. But so we kind of began to be a little more sophisticated in our desires for a movie score.
This is the third movie score that we at Texas Public Radio have asked you to do for a silent film that
Correct.
We're showing. The other two were Sunrise that we already mentioned and Wings. What have been the differences that you've found in writing scores for these films, and which one have you liked best?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Well, of course, we have yet to see whether I'll like The Crowd best.
How it comes out.
Well, yeah, well, how it comes out. I haven't played through the entire thing. And interestingly, by the way, Nathan, the very first one that I did was my first silent movie film score, and it was the first time that I had ever done it. And so when I was going through it at home on the DVD, you know, I'd stop and I'd make a couple of notes. I'd play through a scene. I'd say, okay, now here's where this is with Wings. Well, here's where the big scene comes in, and he goes and flies, and then he sees the girl. And so then I'll play through that and make sure I got all the timings right. And it's kind of a laborious process, but the deal is, I had never actually done the entire thing beginning to end. And so I vividly remember this. I brought along a little bottle of water with me, and I never got to it. It just somehow never hit me that I would be playing for 2 hours and 20 minutes solid without a break at all.
Yeah, Wings is a long movie,
like,
too.
When was I supposed to take a drink of water, you know? So that really made me have a great deal of respect for all those silent movie guys who just must have sat there for hours and hours and hours all day long knocking out this stuff with very little break. So I don't know. I may have a little hat rig or something for this next one. But Wings was fun, and there were so many moments of emotional ups and downs. You have these amazing scenes of flight. It was filmed before the age when they would have just a little screen projection of movies, and the two guys would be sitting in front kind of pretending to go back and forth. Before that, they didn't have that kind of technology in the 20s, and so they actually got up in planes, and you see this amazing footage that today does not look corny or cheesy at all. It's really quite thrilling. And so it was fun for me to sort of fly into the air and get unbound and try to create that magical music. And once again, something that the unjaded audience of the 20s was not used to seeing. I mean, this was a marvel for them. We just can't go back to an era in which we haven't seen it all before.
Right.
So it was fun to try to get some of that magic going. And then, of course, it has a little tragic twist to it. Best friend dies. And so then how do you do that without overdoing it? How do you get something that will reach a modern audience the way that it was supposed to reach the original audience to begin with? I really loved that movie and loved the way that it turned out, and I think it was really warmly received. Sunrise was fun for me in a whole different way, in that it was, as they say, Hollywood expressionism. It was this German expressionist director's first big, splashy, giant Hollywood, big-budget movie. He, I'm sure, had fun bringing some surrealistic and expressionistic moments to a Hollywood audience. And at the same time, he also sort of lavished in big-budget spectacle. So it was fun to bring a little more thorny style of music. The way that I did it was what's called pandiatonicism, which uses the techniques of 12-tone, atonal serial music with a tonal scale that's familiar to your ear. So it was a little bit thornier, a little bit moderner, so to speak. Is moderner a word?
I guess you just made it up.
It's officially a word now. It was more moderner. And it was really fun to play. And of course, it's got this beautiful climactic, about 5-minute ending that's just a big giant crescendo. Always fun for a musician.
We're running short on time, so I wanted you to play another cue for us from the film
goodness.
Here. Pick out a scene that you particularly enjoy And let's hear some music from it. And you did such a good job of setting up the description on that.
Well, thank you. One of my favorite scenes is on the honeymoon, and of course they go to Niagara Falls. And there's this whole very, very comical scene having to do with the first night of their marriage, which really occurs on a train. And there's lots and lots of high and low comedy, along with some real touching and kind of sweet moments. The next scene that we see is beautiful, glorious Niagara Falls. There's a little montage of the mighty falls. So then it shows our couple hiking up to a spot where they get winded and they're tired, but they've seen this beautiful scene, and she reacts to the beauty of Niagara Falls, and he reacts to her beauty. He sees her in a way maybe that he's never seen her before. I chose that moment as the big moment to, we've heard the love theme in its various different forms mm-hmm. happening, and it's just a real simple, the love theme is this D minor theme, but it really reaches its climax here. I think this is more so than when they fall in love, more so than when they get married, more so than the first night of their marriage. This Niagara Falls scene is the scene where the composer is perhaps allowed to just go full on.
The big romance.
The big romance music. Yeah. So here it is. Yeah.
Love in Niagara Falls and the crowd.
Thank you, Barry. Love in Niagara Falls. So much fun to play.
Thanks so much, Barry, for being here today.
And, well, thank you, Nathan. I appreciate it.